What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Avalanche Warning, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Bailey Curtis, joined today by Grant Foster and Gavin Osagara, as always. And guys, I mean, I'm going to start this off very generically with a question I've asked before. 11 games into the season, we all know that Bednar kind of likes to break things up into his 10-game segments. So far through 11 games, give me a thumb rating. Are we thumbs up, thumbs down, in between? Just very basic, how we feeling?
I feel like I'm at a 75%.
Up?
I agree. 75%. A good solid 45-degree angle.
Okay. All right. That's, you know, more positive than negative, I guess. any expansion on that before we start getting into some of the nitty-gritty of the last couple?
16 points in, technically 14 points in 10 games. Yeah, I'll take it. Thank you very much. 16 and 11. You mentioned 10 games, so I took the last game out of it.
They've played 11 so far. We'll call this the segment.
I'm happy with a 727 point percentage. Not happy with the fact that there's four OT losses, but you know.
Yeah, the OT losses will be its own little side tangent, to say the least.
But yeah,
it's 700 hockey. I mean, if anybody's like raging and typing paragraphs about how this team is doomed after 700 hockey, I think you need to temper your expectations a little bit.
I mean, like, it could be worse. We could be the St. Louis Blues who are third to last in the Western Conference.
You could be the Calgary Flames. Did you guys see the meme I put, by the way?
No.
I love that meme.
That's a good meme. Yeah. It's like, let's check in on the Calgary Flames.
Oh my.
But the other thing I want to pose to you, with it being only 11 games in, Gavin, you already kind of touched on it, and tempering expectations. Is there any point through 11 games so far to be up in arms about where this team is at currently? Or is the mindset that there's a lot of hockey left?
I mean, there's always a lot of hockey left. I think you'll always get players, especially like with 10 games, like it's always good to give experiments 10 games. Like that's always the runway you give them. Like look at, especially if you're talking about individual players, like Jonathan Drouin was horrible through 10 games. And then after that was really good. It just kind of takes a while for players and systems to really get going. But I think for the majority, I don't know how you can look at the Avs systems and how they're playing and say like, this isn't a really promising and sustainable thing, especially when they're tied for Carolina in some parts better than and just slightly worse than for top of 5v5 play defense. The power play isn't 30th anymore, it's 23rd. Woohoo. All fixed in one night.
We'll get into that later. Yeah,
but it's you're starting to see an upward trend. Like you're not seeing a downward trend, which is the most important thing. And it is like your first 10 games of the season. So if you're still experimenting with the lines, the middle six got switched up, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But no, I think if you're overly negative, I wonder how you consume sports on a day-to-day basis.
Grant Foster, you have any response to that?
That's called foreshadowing.
Well, it's hard, right? Because during the toughest games of the season, and your teams that you'll realistically see in the second round conference final or Stanley Cup final, you're 1-0-3 with three overtime losses and one win. And that one win, you almost blew it after being up 5-0. So I'm happy the fact that we're getting the points that we need to. We're not dropping points to the Sabres. We're not dropping points to Columbus. We're not dropping well, we did drop points to the Bruins, but I'm, you know, for teams that are up in the upper echelon, I'd say top 10. Not very happy at the fact that we've only won one outright, and that's because, well, the New Jersey Devils forgot how to, you know, not take a penalty. And I don't know. I'm happy with getting the points where we needed to. I'm happy with how we've played. I'm just a little disappointed with how we're getting that end result and how that end result is occurring. Like, the shootout is whatever. The Hurricanes game, like, you got to be scoring an OT there on the power play, a 4-on-3, when all the Hurricanes did was essentially just cover the net or cover, you know, cover Nichushkin in front of the net. And New Jersey, I'm like, yes, you battle back, but, like, what are we doing here with this, Pat? What are we doing here with this, you know, overtime stuff? The Utah Mammoth one, like, that one's just like a – that one's just whatever, because I don't think the Mammoth are – a second round team or a Western Conference final team. But with teams like the Hurricanes, like the Devils and like the Stars, it's like you have to learn how to close out games. And that's one thing that really bit the Avalanche in the butt last year, is you couldn't close out Dallas when you had leads. You need to close out teams when you have leads. And all of the fundamentals for the season start now. Like, it's 11 games. Sure. A lot of fan bases will tell you that, you know, don't overreact, but this is where you develop everything. And over the season, you're just refining and refining and getting ready to go. So
old habits die hard.
They do.
I think that's pretty fair, honestly. I think you're looking at the top competition is always what you want to measure yourself against. But when I see how the Avalanche play against that, they're the better team on the ice throughout mm-hmm. almost every situation. Which is the good news. The bad news is that, like, shades of the Dallas series, you still lose because you have, like, a bad breakdown in a five-minute segment, which does kind of bring into question why that's happening, because your defense has been really good and your goaltenders just can't buy you a save against any amounts of top competition. Whenever things get hot, you're kind of getting forced to outscore a lot of your chances. And then obviously you see, like, that killer instinct in overtime just isn't there. And mm-hmm. that to me is a problem. Like, people say, oh, shootout, I don't care about the shootout. Like, I will write off shootout losses any day of the week. But overtime losses, people will say, like, oh, it's just 3-on-3. I'm like, great. The Avalanche have won one overtime period ever since they won the Cup. Yeah. And it was against Dallas. And it was the luckiest Miles Wood breakaway of all time. Yeah. So it's kind of like you see that mentality creep in, and I think if you're going after Bednar for this type of start, and you're saying, like, this is why he should be fired, I don't think you're a very intelligent person. I think that if you're saying, oh, of course it's not Bednar's fault, I also don't think that's a very intelligent take. Like, human being, he's not like a mythical coach. If he was a mythical coach, he'd have more cups. And yep. It would be with teams that weren't the most dominant in the last 20 years. So I think there's a lot of going on here. I think there's a lot going on with the goaltending. I think there's a bit going on with, in terms of the willingness to just not crumble in these situations. But frankly, I think when you look at the overall picture, I don't know how you can't be satisfied with how well they're playing against every team, except for Boston.
Yeah. No, it that was easily their least fun game to watch of the season so
first
far.
First goal was fun. I bet Lekkonen to be the first goal scorer. So I was having a lot. I was having a great time.
Hey, there we go. Yeah. We'll get into that game here soon, at least the specifics. But I do want to talk about one of the more prominent points through 11 games, and that has been goaltending. Scott Wedgwood, who maybe did not expect to be in the position that he was in to start through 11 games to head into the season, ended up with that starting position while Mackenzie Blackwood rehabbed a lower body injury. But through 11, he's had some solid games. He's had some not so solid games. He's had games where he's bailed the team in front of him out of a bad loss and had games where the team in front of him played great. He, on the other hand, did not. I guess I'll kind of just dive right in here. You could definitely tell by Carolina that some fatigue was starting to hit a little bit. This is a guy who, in his entire professional career, I can't recall ever having been a starter, at least at the national level. So this is a lot of playing time for him. And you see that come to fruition during Carolina, where he starts to let in goal after goal after goal. And Trent Miner comes in and pitches what to him is a shutout performance. Lets in a filthy goal by Seth Jarvis in the shootout. And we'll get more into the specifics of that game. Coming out of that performance and heading into a back-to-back series against Boston and the New Jersey Devils. This is where, and we'll kind of touch more on Bednar's stubbornness and some of his lapses maybe as a coach here in a bit, but even without the hindsight, you look at this back-to-back series, and I just want a one-word answer here, guys. Looking at this Boston game, who is the goaltender that you play in that game?
I mean, when you look at, you have Boston, and then you have the New Jersey Devils, the hottest team in the league, by the way, at the time.
That's more than one word.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Sorry. I think
that Boston game, funny. How do you not start the more kind of whatever of the two goalies and not save your best one available till the second game? I don't know how that's not a conversation or not what you do.
Yep. Grant, for that Boston game, is it Wedgewood or Miner that you start without hindsight to look back on?
I'd still start Wedgewood. If I was the coach, really? I think I'd still start him. Because here's the famous problem that the Avalanche have many, many times. And this goes for a lot of NHL teams too, not just the Avalanche. But you get like a San Jose Sharks or you get like a Blackhawks and you put your backup in and the backup plays terribly, but you still want to get points out of it, so you end up throwing your starter out there anyways. And so, you know, then you're just grasping for all-out offense and your starter, what would be your starter, to come in, you know, halfway through the game and not really get the rest that he needs. I do still kind of agree with Wedgewood starting there. Obviously not his greatest performance by any stretch of the imagination. I didn't think Miner looked that bad against New Jersey. I mean, the Jack Hughes one, I don't know where he lost the puck, but I don't think he looked as bad as maybe fans would tell you. Because I went back and watched the Trent Miner. I thought he made some really good saves. I thought he made saves that, other than the Jack Hughes one, that he needed to, and that everything else was more defensive. I mean, one of them was just pure luck. I mean, the rebound goal for Brown was just pure luck. The Jack Hughes goal wasn't great. And the Gritschuk goal is, I mean, sometimes you're going to get beat by that. But that's also because you're an AHL goalie, not an NHL goalie. So I don't know.
Which is why
I liked what I thought.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's why you start the NHL guy, but I think I think I'd rather try to confirm 2 points by starting your starter against Boston rather than kind of throwing Miner out there and have it being a question mark. But we'll probably get into and we were talking off before the pod was, you know, maybe Wedgewood he's just played too many games in a row. I think he played what, 8 games in, what was it? Carolina was the 9th game in a row he played. Was that
it? Yeah, something like that.
No, that no. Carolina was the 8th game of the season, okay. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, and it's, I think for me, when you're talking about, like, the problem I have with it is you see how, you see that he does not straight up have a good game against Carolina. He continues his performance from the game prior as well against the Utah Mammoth, where he also gives up a bad goal. And you're kind of just like, all right, is this really the guy you want to start, considering Miner is coming off of such a good performance? And Miner, Wedgewood has the benefit of being a career backup goaltender, and he knows, and he's gotten adjusted to not playing as much. Like, he can, he knows that he'll play, and then sometimes it can be 2 weeks again before he plays again. And even though he had a great start, that means that it doesn't, it's not an effect on him. It's just what's going to have to happen. And he still has to come in 2 weeks later and play well. I think Wedgewood is more accustomed to that, but also not playing so many games in a row. Like, we saw this last season too. Like, Wedgewood was fantastic until he was not. And he has his limits. And I think when Miner puts up such a good performance against the Carolina Hurricanes and allows the Avs to come back into it, to then turn around in that Boston game and say, congratulations, Wedgewood. Like, you got pulled? Well, guess what? You're going in the next game too. It's like, give the guy a rest. Like, coming off of that situation versus like, oh, well, he didn't play the Boston game. Then I, or the Carolina game, sorry. Then I would be like, okay, maybe we can have the conversation of get the better of 2 points, because you're going up against the behemoth that is the New Jersey Devils. So I can understand that situation. But when you come into the context of Wedgewood has already been pulled and already looks fatigued, and then you put him in again against Boston, and guess what? He gives up two horrible game goals and single-handedly loses you that game. Like, I know I love Wedgewood. I like to talk about how well he did. He deserved one of the best three stars in the NHL that first six games or whatever it was. But since then, he is the reason why you have lost 3 out of 4 games in overtime. Also because the power play is awful. But you need to – that's kind of for later. But we'll
That's my whole thing too, is you see the performance that Wedgewood puts up against Carolina, and your first thought is not, oh, maybe we should give him a game to rest so he can play against the better team. That's not the thought process there.
A team that he's historically been really good against.
Yeah. So that's my struggle with it, is they saw that. And my first thought when I was talking to Rudo about this was the definition of insanity, right? Is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that's where I think they started to get into that habit with Scott Wedgewood and saying, no, he just had a bad game, he'll be better tomorrow. Not realizing, again, that this is a guy who has not been a starting goaltender at all in his NHL career.
And has never been the guy to really, like, I'm going to turn it around the very next game. Like, it's...
No.
And it sucks because obviously you don't have another trusted goaltender to put in. That's also a big part of it that I think needs to be talked about. Like, it's not like we have Blackwood that's fully healthy and we're just like, no, we're not going to play him.
No.
It's he's healthy now, which I think is why you should play him in the next few games. But it was a hard situation to begin with. The fact that the Avalanche are above 500, they are 700 right now as a team with their third string and second string goalie playing, I think is a real testament to what they can be. And that's with not even all of their guys going right now and the power play struggling for so long. But that's why you're so excited, because you've seen already how good it is and you can see how it gets better.
And so I'll use this to kind of transition into a different point too. So was announced today that Trent Miner, today being Wednesday as of recording, that Trent Miner did clear waivers. So he has officially been sent, I'll try and get in the habit of saying, up the hockey highway to Loveland. So he's officially back with the Colorado Eagles. He did not play tonight. He's not even listed as a roster player. Kyle Keizer did start for the Eagles with Isaac Posch being the backup. But with that situation, Trent Miner going on waivers the day that the Avalanche play the New Jersey Devils for the second time at home, you get the confirmation that Mackenzie Blackwood is healthy, but he's not starting. This caused a lot of discourse in saying if he is healthy enough to sit the bench, he should be healthy enough to play. And this is where I want to get some of your, I guess, insight from both of you, or not just opinions, thoughts on that. The decision is to go with Scott Wedgwood for the second part of the New Jersey series. And aside from maybe 5 minutes of bad hockey from the entire team, not just Scott Wedgwood, but 5 minutes of bad hockey from the entire team overall helps kind of get you the win. Is there, or should there have been, any kind of conversation as to Wedgwood not starting that game in favor of Mackenzie Blackwood finally getting his first back?
No, because Jacob Markstrom had what Blackwood would have had. And I think you have the perfect game to start Mackenzie Blackwood here soon in the San Jose Sharks. And, you know, I wouldn't throw him against the Vegas Golden Knights, because the Golden Knights are a more dangerous team than the Devils are, in my opinion. I would not throw him against the Golden Knights. I think he got the perfect opportunity with the San Jose Sharks to just let him get in a game, let him get his feet wet. The Sharks are an offensively gifted team because they have many prospects in their prospect pool that are developing, like Celebrini, Smith, Misa, all of those.
One of which just came off of a heck of a hat trick, but
the Sharks' defense is woeful. And if there's any team that the Avalanche can beat, like just playing pure offense and not having to really worry if their goaltender is going to be really great or not, it's probably the San Jose Sharks. And, you know, players love playing against their former teams, as we know as Avalanche fans. They love playing against their former team.
Oh, for sure. I would agree with that. I think I'm going back and forth on whether or not Blackwood should start the Golden Knights or the Sharks. I think that there's a lot of merits to both. But honestly, I kind of want to close with, like, the whole Wedgwood situation is like, okay, you want to play him against Jersey. You want him to have that confidence builder game. So then he can, because you don't exactly know what you have yet in Blackwood, you need to get him up to speed. And with Wedgwood, you want to make sure, like, your most reliable goaltender at this point in time is well suited to play and has his confidence. But you play him instead of resting him, you mismanage the situation to the point now where he still gave up 4 goals in the last game. And I would say about 2 of them are actually his fault. So you're kind of in the point where you don't have a rebuilt Wedgwood now because of your decisions. So now you're heading into the weekend with, is Blackwood, I don't know, do you throw him to the Wolves against the Vegas Golden Knights? Or do you basically just say, like, no, guys, we're going to throw these points away and we'll just focus everything on the back-to-back against the San Jose Sharks? Because that's when we'll play Blackwood, which, like, ideally I love for Blackwood to play. And to just get into it, not have to be thrown like Jason Markstrom was to the Avalanche, I think that is a great – it's also funny because they're Jersey, obviously, that's where Blackwood came from. And I don't know, there's a lot of similarities going for here. But I think with Markstrom, that is a window into what could possibly happen with Blackwood. And the same thing, though, is if you really trust your starter – at this point, is he not your most trusted goaltender? Because for me, I have no trust in Scott Wedgwood to make a save at this point. I think he looks really bad in the most, like, Shakespearean way I could possibly say that. He looked bad. He's just not.
It was a woeful performance.
A woeful performance. It brought dread to my house. But no, I think... But it's a problem because you see him in the crease and he is so squirrely and so out of position. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me a lot of Georgiev, where because he was so unconfident in himself, basic chances, he would be falling down. He would be hugging a post. He didn't have any lateral movement. And it would turn like a normal 3-on-3 breakdown into a high danger scoring chance. That is who I see Wedgwood being. I do not like his game at all right now. I really hope he can come out next game and be like, what were you saying? And I'll be like, nothing, Wedge Daddy. I mean, Wedge Wall. But
oh my God.
Don't worry about it. But no, I think
Daddy Wedge. By the way. Daddy Wedge. Wedge.
But no,
I'm so Daddy uncomfortable Wedge. Right now.
Don't worry about it. But yeah, no, I think it's a hard situation with goaltending that is purely brought out by bad coaching decisions.
Yeah. Speaking of, great transition into this. Before I throw the overarching question, I do want to – oh, Grant, did you have one more thing to touch on before we transition?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, throw Wedge. Yeah, I'll summarize it briefly so we can move on to the next topic. Yes, throw Wedgewood into against the Vegas Golden Knights. Don't get Blackwood started on the same. Don't get Blackwood in his head like Wedgewood might be. Because I think that's a fair point, Gavin. But I'm saying if Wedgewood's already contemplating his abilities. Let's not put Blackwood in that same, let's not put Blackwood just in that same Wedge conversation.
Return, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Wedgewall,
the bricks are falling, unfortunately, but you know what? We still have some pace. We can be putting those walls, but we can put those bricks back up. You know, he also just needs the Avalanche defense not to fall apart within 2 minutes of.
I've heard that kind of wood is going out of style. It's prone to weather decay. I have heard that there's this other wood out there that's way better. It's it's black.
No, and this is that transitioned into my point, and I'll add my thoughts very briefly before we move on here. I think I'm of a different mindset than the both of you. I think if there's a true test that Blackwood kind of wants to get into, saying like, I am ready to perform, I'm ready to take my role as the Avalanche starter, like this is the game that he's going to want to get into. And if he's ready, Bednar's going to feel that he's ready. I feel like the sole reason we didn't see him start against New Jersey was kind of just like maybe that, you know, Wedgewood bounce back game, which he maybe had. I didn't love him during the second New Jersey game. But I think that's just kind of a way to get Wedgewood back into the role of how a game day is working on a regular basis, get him back into that routine of being on the roster and part of the team, even if it is just as a backup. So if there's any game that I kind of want to see him get back into, it is that Vegas game. For me, just because of some of the lapses in performance that we have seen from Scott Wedgewood, I'd almost like to see him get that start against San Jose rather than flipped like you guys are looking at it. But moving on, do want to get into some other points. We kind of alluded to it with some of Jared Bednar's decisions. Figuring out what he's going to do on a back-to-back like this is kind of a coin toss. Trying to predict what Jared Bednar is going to do is very, very difficult. So there's no telling what could happen this weekend. But some questionable decisions coming as of late. There's that goaltending situation in the last back-to-back that maybe I wouldn't have made. Grant, you seem to agree with it. But I think as a collective, the entire fan base was, for the most part, confused. Another kind of confusing point is overtime. Now, I say this as something to take with a grain of salt, because there's this conversation that Rudo and I had in saying that, like, three-on-three really does not matter in the playoffs. It's not something that really – this is his kind of argument to the conversation. He does not like three-on-three just because it doesn't apply to playoffs. You're playing five-on-five hockey until somebody scores. I'm of the mindset of that's what gets you there. So it needs to be hot in ways to set you up standing wise for playoffs, moving down the schedule and things of that sort. With that latter part in mind. There's something to be said about the Avalanche racking up points and, you know, only having lost in regulation once. I think that is a feat in and of itself. Really impressive point. My conversation started to become, when is one point not enough? And I think that's going to be kind of a conversation starter for the Avalanche moving forward. How do you get over that overtime hump and not let it get to a shootout? Because I think everybody can agree that the shootout sucks and is like not unimportant, but it's just a crappy way to end a hockey game. At the same time, 3-on-3, you need to learn how to finish it. You need to kind of neutralize some of those neutral zone turnovers and some of those lapses in your defense when you're defending the possession team. And the tried and true way to fail this for Jared Bednar is putting out Nathan MacKinnon and Martin Necas on the ice at the same time. Bites you twice so far this season. And I mean, let's just go ahead and get into it with this Devils game. You see that happen, and almost immediately both players are kind of making weird plays with the puck. Ends up on the Devils' stick, and they put the game away. Is this something that Bednar needs to be taking a closer look at? Because that first unit that he put out for the 3-on-3, I thought was phenomenal. I thought they played a good first shift. And then you see MacKinnon and Necas come out on the same shift. And I don't know about you guys, but my shoulders just sag. I'm like, okay, it's inevitable at this point. I'll throw the floor over before I start blabbing anymore, because there are a million different things I could say on this. But Gavin, starting off with you, just is that more so wanting to win or lose with your top guys, or is that just a coaching lapse?
I think it's tough, because I think Bednar literally had a quote a few years ago that was like, you win with your top guys. So that's definitely a lot of the mentality. But the problem is, you've seen for so many years now that the Rantanen and MacKinnon pairing was horrible because they can't play defense. And when they've caught that puck up, because it is a when more times than it is an if, it's in the back of your net. And it's no different here with Necas and MacKinnon. I actually think you have a much bigger opportunity to be more dangerous on the power play, or sorry, not the power play, the overtime. Because you have like two high speedsters, zone entry guys like MacKinnon and Necas. Why are you playing them together? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thing. Like, Necas is a very well-known overtime guy. MacKinnon is also good in overtime. However, he will cough the puck up. We saw this in the Devils game. He just, all right, I'm going to walk through three guys, and he coughs the puck up. And it's Necas that obviously can't corral another puck and get the two-on-one the other way, but you're seeing consistent problems from a lineup where I get the mentality of it's all of your top guys. We're going to do Makar, we're going to do MacKinnon, and we're going to do Necas. And it has the highest scoring potential. But also, when possession goes the other way, you have now lost the game. You are playing suicide hockey, where you are playing like dead man's trigger hockey, where if you don't score, you're going to lose. And you lose more times than you score. That's just the fact of it. When you have a guy like Nichushkin out there, when you have anyone else in your lineup, you have so many wings to complement these like highly offensive guys that have lapses defensively. You've built your roster to accommodate that and to cover their worst mistakes. But for some reason, Bednar just refuses to use that in the OT, despite the evidence staring him in the face over and over again. This isn't like, oh, he didn't have the right personnel. Like, no, you have the personnel. This is solely on Jared Bednar for making stubborn, bad hockey decisions that have cost you points. Now, like, I don't want the Bednar hate to be like, oh, and that's why he's the worst coach. No, he's a great coach in the NHL. He, like, you look at all of these games, the Carolina game, the both Jersey games, the Avalanche have come back with pure heart to either get points from the jaws of defeat or win the game. When you saw several other years ago, like that Jersey game, the Avalanche would not have scored that power play goal with Nathan MacKinnon making it another two-goal lead. They would not have come out in the third the way they did and just say, we are winning this game. Like, you would see so often that, okay, now Jersey's going to win the game, and we're going to just have the biggest meltdown ever because we gave up a five-goal lead. So I think that there's something to be said there between, like, you're looking at all the negatives of a coach, but you have to really look at these positives. That's just my two cents, but I kind of got off topic there. Sorry.
I don't think – if I look at other teams around the league, and even if I look at the Devils game where they win an OT, you want to know who was on the ice when Jack Hughes got the puck and shot the first time for the Devils? It was Jesper Bratt and Siegenthaler. Jesper Bratt, a guy who does not play defense, a guy who's not a two-way forward. And I don't think it's a problem with I still don't think it's a problem with MacKinnon and Natchez being out there. What I do think is a problem is there's almost this reluctance from at least it seems like MacKinnon, especially this year, to kind of everyone hates it, but it's how 3-on-3 is played, where if you don't like what you see, you peel off and you look again to see if you have something. I don't know what's going through MacKinnon or Natchez's mind really with overtime right now, but they're not being patient. And I don't understand if it's a rush to avoid the shootout. I don't know if it's a rush to try to, like, get in behind them so that they can make some kind of different play. But if I watch other teams around the league, and I watch teams like the Lightning, or if I watch the Edmonton Oilers, or, you know, they throw out their two topmost skillful guys who maybe aren't the greatest two-way forwards. But the one thing I don't see them do is I don't see them going on a 3-on-1 like Nathan MacKinnon does, and instead of peeling off and trying again. Excuse me. I understand the narrative that two times, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, kind of mentality that's going on with Avalanche fans, especially after the first OT loss was a really bad one for MacKinnon. That did not put him in a great light already. And now Nate just kind of fumbled the puck this time. That one's on him, really. I wouldn't say that's on MacKinnon as much, because you're trying to, in that instance, you're kind of trying to stretch out and use, you know, you're trying to stretch out, use the ice that you have, use the space that you have, especially if you're MacKinnon and Nate just who wants all of the space, you know? So I don't blame MacKinnon for being so far forward, you know, on that one, on the Natchez goof. But, you know, I don't think it's a I think it's a problem in terms of something is going on between MacKinnon and Natchez when they're going out there for OT, and there's almost this, like, rush to get this game over with and get back in the locker room rather than strategically move their way up the ice. And I think they rely a little bit too much on Makar sometimes. As great as Makar is, I think they rely on him a little too much. I maybe think Taves would be a better option for Natchez and MacKinnon, as Taves isn't looking to really jump up into the play as much, which might be a little controversial. But I think I need to see more. I think I need to see more, because the MacKinnon one is just a blatant turnover. The Natchez one, he bumbles the puck. And I think those two especially just need to think more tactically. I don't think there's a problem with them being on the ice together as of October 29th, 2025. If I see another game where something happens, maybe I'll sing a different tune.
Yeah, I think with MacKinnon, though, is you – I do agree. Like, I think I agree with your analysis that they're definitely not – trying to play the game that OT is, where you're trying to hold possession, you're making it as boring as possible, and just kind of, if you don't like what you see, just leave the zone. I see that a lot from Natchez and Makar, but honestly, it's MacKinnon is really solely the one that I notice not doing that. And he'll just completely just cough up the puck in honestly really annoying fashion, to the point where it's, you're almost at a point where it's like, you kind of have to, I think you have to send a message to some people like that and just not play the same lineup. Is what you, I don't think you keep rewarding it by exactly what Bailey said, the definition of insanity. I think if McKinnon wants to have,
but I don't think it's the definition,
Necas and Makar with him, he shouldn't do dumb shit with the puck and single-handedly cost you points. I think that that's a lot of that's the Nathan McKinnon experience. But no, I you have a lot of talent to work it out on overtime. I don't think it's a, again, you are losing in overtime. I don't even blame the Avs for not sealing the Jersey game, because they had possession a good amount of times, and if they had any legs, they would have been able to seal the game. But they,
it comes down to letting Jack Hughes set up in front of the net. And
it's, you're on the second night of a back-to-back, a weird matinee back-to-back, and you already dumped the entire tank just getting it past regulation. And Devils fans want to pop the cork like they've won the entire Stanley Cup, which is hilarious because no. Yeah.
It's so,
man, I thought Avalanche fans were bipolar.
No, go ahead.
Make fun of Devils fans.
I thought Avalanche fans were bipolar, but my God, the New Jersey Devils fans, like, they, like, I mentioned something, like, I mentioned the Timo Meier hooking call in OT, and like, they were like, well, that's because you guys just suck. And I went, okay. And so I remember,
and you
that
provide
exact
more
same
substance
tag
for me, please. Yeah.
And so I used that exact same tag when the Avalanche won. And he was like, oh, our team sucks. I was like, well, who sucks? You or me. You know? I was like, geez, you really flipped quick. I mean, are you sure you're not a stuntman or something?
Gavin, you alluded to it just a little bit, but I do want to pose the question, even with as crazy as it seems in my mind. These decisions are ultimately being made by Jared Bednar and company. Does the question of his seat being hot come into mind this early in the season?
I think it would take like a Blues, Calgary Flames level start to just be the legit question of like, oh man, is it Bednar's time? But honestly, I don't really have that idea with it, because you are playing 700 hockey. So if you're talking about the coach having a hot seat, I think you're insane if you fire him for something like this, especially when your systems have been so good. It's really just, for me, the whole, like, Bednar is a hot seat thing. And I think if the thing that's annoyed me for years are people talking about, would people being like, oh, of course Bednar's never in the hot seat, it's never his fault. I'm like, it kind of is. I think in a lot of situations in the playoffs, I have my concerns about Jared Bednar. But in the, as a regular season coach, especially with how you've seen him, like, I was concocting the evil negative take last night against the New Jersey Devils. I was mixing it up in the cauldron. And it was when the Avs just finished the second period. Like I alluded to, they were 6-4 going into the third. And I was thinking, like, if the Avs lose this period, I'm going to have a serious discussion of, and they don't come out like they want it. I think it's worth, and they, you know, slide to five games in a row that they've lost. I don't think it would be out of the question to start bringing up, is Jared Bednar the guy to seriously motivate these players to do anything special when the chips are down? And the Avs then came out and only held Jersey to 3 shots while completely sealing the game away. So that was my, like, I still have faith in Jared Bednar, but if you're going to talk about, like, this season isn't in, especially in the playoffs, which we're 11 games in, we're so far. But I think if you're coming in and you're saying that the results of this season will not infect his job here, I think you're delusional.
Grant, anything to add on the Jared Bednar situation?
I think Bednar faces the same issue. I think he faces the same issue that every coach faces is, are you, at least every new coach, that, which whose name is not John Cooper, even he's getting questioned recently, which is kind of funny though. Are you hot? Yeah, we love you. Are we cold? We don't like you. And it's kind of like, well, if we go through these ebbs and flows, if we're just going, oh man, he sucks because he's on this 5-game skid. Oh, he's amazing because we're on this 6-game skid where we've won a bunch of games. You know, I don't fully agree with the narrative of like fire Bednar just yet. I think he's doing well as of the current moment. But like I said, my whole thing for Bednar is I want you to prove that you can be a capable coach in the playoffs. If you cannot be a capable coach in the playoffs with a team that's trying to win, you're gone. That's it for me. All this regular season stuff doesn't really mean anything unless we seriously start falling off a cliff. But 16 points in 11 games. Currently, I think we're on pace for like a 108 point season. Is that right? Someone do that.
Something like
does
that.
Someone know?
There's a reason I went into writing and not mathematics.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You're terrible at math.
I am.
Shots fired.
I agree.
We're on pace right now for 105 points. That's good enough for me. If you win the division, that's great. If you don't win the division, you're still going to have to play the same personnel as always. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. You might play Utah instead of Winnipeg, but, you know, whatever. I don't care. The whole Bednar conversation is such a weird one because people want to persecute a guy for being with a team long term when, you know, it's just like if it's a playoffs thing, I get it. But if it's a regular season thing where he's constantly having you in the playoffs year in and year out, you're complaining about that. I don't fully understand your argument overall. Playoffs, yes, but regular season, I don't fully understand.
No. Before I throw it over to you, Bailey, I heard that one of the best quotes before the season started. It was, unfortunately, everyone around the Avs community has to wait through an entire regular season to see the results they actually care about.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is.
Yep. Before we get into some finer details of some of these games where we've had some of these thoughts, I do want to throw it over to our network sponsor in DraftKings. So we will be right back after this.
Hockey is back, and this season, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, brings you all the speed, skill, and nonstop action you love. DraftKings Sportsbook delivers the unmatched intensity of the NHL right to your fingertips. From player props to the thrill of live in-game betting, every drop of the puck is your shot to win big. Now, currently, the day before Halloween, you can bet on games like the Calgary Flames at the Ottawa Senators, where the Flames are underdogs at +136 and the Senators are favored at -162 with the over-under set at 5.5. Or if you're really crazy as an Avalanche fan, you could bet against the Dallas Stars, who are underdogs in their matchup against the Tampa Bay Lightning, where the Tampa Bay Lightning are at -142 and the Dallas Stars are at +120 on the money line, with the over-under set at 6.5, but we all know the Dallas Stars can't score after their game against the Washington Capitals. Please note that these odds are subject to change. New customers, this one is for you. Bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get paid out $300 in bonus bets instantly. Light the lamp all season long with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN to turn $5 into $300 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text H-O-P-E-N-Y 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gambling resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer. Copyright NHL 2025. All rights reserved.
And we're back. Thank you again so much to DraftKings for sponsoring the Hockey Podcast Network and allowing us to get paid while we do what we do. With that said, there's a couple of games in this last couple stretch that we have not talked about that we talked about in the last episode. They have now since happened. Starting off with the first of seven, I believe it is, Heritage Nights, where we see the Nordiques throwback jerseys. This is the first of two matchups where the Nordiques were able to face off against the Hartford Whalers in a reignited Adams Division matchup. Maybe it didn't go the way the Avs wanted to, especially to start the game. Scott Wedgwood lets in some not so nice goals and gets the pull. Trent Miner gets his first official minutes of the season. And I mean, for a lack of better words, stands on his head, does everything that the Avalanche need him to do to allow them to get back in this game and force an overtime, which does not really amount to anything. Shootout happens and Seth Jarvis is the only one to score. And I don't think it really matters who you had in goal for the Avalanche at that point. That Seth Jarvis goal was a pretty one by all, you know, definition of a shootout goal. This one for me, though, when we talk about some of the problems that the Avalanche have had in overtime with the power play, what have you, that latter point in the power play was what frustrated me most, I think, during this game. It takes them seven tries. The Avalanche eventually went 1-for-8 on the power play. It took them seven tries to finally get one on the board. The Carolina Hurricanes, if I'm not mistaken, ended 0-for-5 on the night. And I mean, their power play is still bottom of the barrel as well. They finally got on the board the other night with Andrei Svechnikov, which we're not here to talk about that. But something to be said about...
Thank God, by the way.
It was bound to happen. Let's go ahead and talk about it here. So again, power play goes 1-for-8, finally gets on the board after seven tries. Avalanche finally get back into this game, which speaks to their resilience, to their tenacity, to their no quit attitude in a lot of these games through 11. This one in particular was just a very, very frustrating one for me. And that's where I'll throw it over to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, you finally make the change to put Nichushkin on the power play, and it immediately pays dividends, and you score.
Yeah, or at least power play one, yeah.
Yeah, you did the same thing with Landeskog a while ago. I think it was on the Utah Mammoth game, the first one, where it was tied 1-1, and what's the change you make? You put a actual good net front presence that can screen the goalie in Gabe Landeskog in front of Vejimelka, and he pushes back the defense. The defenders actually have to commit to him, and they can't just muscle him out of the way. And MacKinnon immediately scores. Mm-hmm. So it's the solution we saw coming the whole time. Obviously, it didn't immediately fix the power play, but it really is just like, yeah, you know, the guy that scored like 10 power play goals in his career in a season, he'd probably do that. Like, that's just kind of what we were all screaming the whole time. But no, that Carolina game was, It's frustrating because there's so many times where the Avalanche were playing a good process, but just couldn't find the finishing, even though they were scoring like three even strength goals, 5v5 goals per game, while having one of the worst finishings as a team in the league. That to me was like, there's so much here. There's so much potential for this to be insane. And I'm not surprised that the Avalanche just exposed New Jersey the very next time. But yeah, that's my thoughts on that Carolina game.
I mean, I know I was there, but Grant, you were also there in person for this game. And I know you and I talked at length afterward about some of these certain processes, and especially where special teams are concerned. I mean, we talked about Seth Jarvis on the shootout. He also manages to put up a shorthanded goal on this Avalanche team.
I'm so glad they don't play the Hurricanes until January. That way I don't have to hear about Seth Jarvis. I don't like that kid.
I like his face.
I love him.
Just like he looks like someone gave him bad peanut butter, and he's just like
that's horrible.
It's like a chipmunk.
He's being able to talk to that man in the locker room is one of the more fun experiences I've had as a reporter. He is hilarious, especially off the record.
All right, we get it. You're amazing. From North Carolina. We get it. You're from North Carolina. Not, wow.
That's not even it.
Anyways, moving on.
He is a media dream. Moving on. Continue.
Oh, moving on. Yeah, that's why he's a media dream on his walkout day too. You know, when they get bounced in the Eastern Conference Finals.
You were just bitter.
I mean, the thing about the Avalanche is like they keep doing this really, really dumb thing, especially with the Hurricanes. And you saw it on the power play when Landeskog turns the puck over, because he thought someone was there. Brent Burns was not. I don't think Brent Burns was even in the vicinity, if I remember correctly. But you know, that one is just like, hey, Seth Jarvis, you scored on a breakaway. Wow, great job! Aren't you the first round pick that everybody thought was going to be like the next superstar in North Carolina? Oh wait, you're not.
I don't know about all that, but okay.
The problem with the Avalanche when they play teams that have good forechecking like the Hurricanes is you have to think of the game in two ways. One, am I in the neutral zone? Yes. Two, dump the puck every time. Don't even like, because it bit them so many times, and they do this stupid pass where they pass it horizontally in the neutral zone. And oh, hey, there's a breakaway for the Hurricanes. It's so dumb. Easiest way to beat the Hurricanes are the most simple team to play against of all time. Hit their D in the corners and dump the puck. And you didn't do that for two periods. You didn't do that for a period and a half. And then when you started doing it, oh, hey, we scored. Wow. That's a revelation. But I want them when they play teams like the Hurricanes, and maybe they don't have the awesome start that they did, to not give up four. I mean, the Avalanche outshot the Hurricanes in that second period, I think like 19 to 3.
Which period?
In the second period. And
16 to 5.
Whatever. And you know how many goals the Hurricanes gave up in that period? Two. Like, when the Avalanche aren't on it, you can't, like, just don't give up four.
They only gave up one during the second period.
No, they gave up four. They gave up three in the first period when they were getting outshot and outplayed. I thought you were talking about the
second period, because Parker Kelly was the only one to score.
What great teams do when they're not playing their best hockey is they don't allow goals like the Avalanche early season, where you allow one goal, but that's it. That's it. And that's what the Hurricanes were doing to the Avalanche when the Avalanche were doing really well and the Hurricanes were playing very subpar. And it's just like, I want you to learn from that. I want you to take that away. But other than that, I think they played well. I mean, 1-for-8 on the power play, and who is everybody across Avalanche podcasts, fan base, media have been saying to put on the top power play unit Valeri Nichushkin and Victor Olofsson. And oh my goodness gracious, they scored. It's a revolution. Thank you very much for coming out to play. See you next day. But that's all I have for the Hurricanes. I did a lot of yelling because, you know, apparently Jack Drury, when he's in front of a player and the other guy, you know, jumps on top of him, apparently that's a holding call. I didn't realize that, but
that was some crap.
I want to ask you guys before we get into more points, and I would like to move on just because I don't want to spend this entire segment talking about the Canes game. That Parker Kelly goal, he sticks his hand out and it deflects into the net. Rod Brind'Amour calls for a missed stoppage. And at first, I maybe thought he was looking for a hand pass on that call. Turns out there was maybe a missed high stick earlier, like a couple seconds earlier. With that in mind, the Avalanche have run into two situations now that kind of bend the rule book in a way. What are your overall thoughts, I guess, on that goal standing?
I think it's a quote from Alexander the Great. Nana nana boo boo. I don't care. There's so many calls that go against each team. And again, it's the same thing that happens over and over again where we know I'll keep repeating it until it ends. When I'm comatose, dementia ridden, and on my deathbed, best sport, worst league is what hockey is. The NHL is a joke. You get all of these calls that completely go against the team, and they are so annoying, don't really impact the game whatsoever, but change entire games because they call goals back. And it sucks because then when stuff happens like that, the other team feels no sympathy for you because they're like, nope, this is just karma swinging the other way. So that's how I see it. You take what you can get in this league up until the point where Gary Bettman is gone, Bill Daly is gone, we stop having a commissioner, become a serious sports league, play games in the Sphere in Las Vegas. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Could you imagine?
It's a great idea, which is why the NHL has never thought of it.
Any other thoughts on this game before we move ahead to the back-to-back?
Goal counted. We'll see you on the 3rd of January, and hopefully that's the last I hear of the Hurricanes for a little while.
Did you hear about Seth Jarvis, Grant?
God! No, I didn't. Okay, hey, all right, we're moving on to the Boston Bruins, everybody. We're, you know, the Avalanche, you know, after playing the Hurricanes and actually having an absolute stinker of a night, then, you know, turning it around, the Avalanche go into the Boston, go into TD Garden, and guess what they do? Oh, no, they are, oh, wait, oh, sorry, I did that backwards. They did great. Oh, Lecky, hey, you got a goal from playing in front of the goalie when Nature's Vision sauces you a pass from below the goal line. Wow, maybe we should try that again. No, we're gonna carry the puck in. We're not gonna dump it. We're gonna do this crap where we're going around the outside faceoff dots, and we're not gonna do anything substantial when it comes to creating opportunities in front of the goal. Does that sound great to you? That was the Boston Bruins versus the Colorado Avalanche. Questions, please.
How did it work out?
Terribly. Terribly. Oh. Because let me tell you this also. God. Hey, Brent Burns and Josh Manson, you guys were doing great. You guys were doing really great. But you know what you can't do? You can't let Dipsy Doodle walk down and just shoot it on Wedgwood. Hey, Wedgwood, can you make a save one time? No? All right, well, I guess we're screwed because we're going to lose 3-2 to the joke of a Boston Bruins in 25-26. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, I think there's one of the goals, I think it's the second goal, I would not put on Scott Wedgwood because that's not his fault at all. But the first one, especially when it happens, like the Avs are absolutely cruising, they're just hemming in the Boston Bruins. It's looking like it's going to be a 5-0 blowout. He gives up that. And then, like, total diss on the Avalanche. They do not handle that well. They completely go to bed, and it gets even worse. The other greatest problem is you were 1-2 heading into the third period. You've got 4 seconds left. You know what, guys? Go into the third period. You're going to walk into the locker room. Jared Bednar is going to be standing there with a belt in his hands, and you know what's about to happen because of the performance you put on the ice. But then Scott Wedgwood lets in the weakest attempt of all time, does not cover his post correctly, gives up a stinker of a wrap, not even a wraparound attempt. He doesn't wrap around. He just pulls a 90-degree angle, turns around, and buries it because he realized Wedgwood is lost in Candyland.
Yeah.
And it's
That is a game where
seriously Wedgwood lost you that. He just gives up the goals at the worst times. And yeah, that's the end of that one, which really sucks because then if the Avs win that one, you know, stinker of a game, they play bad, but they still manage to edge out a 3-2 win or a 2-1 win, fine. You go into Jersey and then you get a point in overtime. I am walking away with a smile on my face. I don't care. I'm saying whatever. That Jersey game was a scheduled loss and you still walked away with a point. You got 3 out of 4 possible ones. Fine. But that's not ultimately what happens. I think it's just not a good choice to start Scott Wedgwood there when you could have so easily given him a break and then played him against the more legit competition. Instead, you left Miner out to dry and he gives up a bad goal to Jack Hughes, which breaks you because, again, I actually thought Jersey was much better in the other game.
As far as process goes, absolutely. Yeah,
Jersey should have won that second period. There was the karma came back, so the Avs were able to leave that first period with a 2-0 lead when they did not deserve to, which was, you know what, I'll take that. But that first game, dude, the Avalanche completely had their way any way they wanted with the Jersey Devils. They just, as a team that was coming in so hot, and the fact that the Avalanche were on the back-to-back, the Avalanche were playing a great game. And ultimately, again, like when you need your solid goaltending, like every goal counts. We can't easily tie it. We can't just outscore our problems here, especially when our power play is not working right now. And Miner gives up something like that to Jack Hughes. My fantasy team loved it. I'll say that right now. But my heart did not. Yeah. And it's just one of those, and I think it's the story for the Miner Wedgwood combo is goalies are not giving you the saves that they need to, while other goalies across the ice are making unreal saves. And they're forcing you to outscore their problems when the Avalanche just unfortunately could not up to that point. They were against Jersey, but hopefully that doesn't have to happen again.
Yeah. I will say for that first Jersey game, the back end of a back-to-back, that was, for me, one of Brock Nelson's better games. You finally see him rewarded for something with a goal, or with I guess, another goal. And I really liked his process through that game. It's just unfortunate, just looking, maybe it is hindsight, but looking at it after the fact and being like, Trent Miner never should have been in this situation. And that's just the luck of the draw and how the sausage was made, I guess, in this situation and how it all threw out at the end of the day. And
what?
I'm trying to find
what kind of expression is that?
Have you never heard that expression?
You've never heard the term how the sausage is made?
Who has ever said that?
Everybody.
That is a very popular expression. Actually.
Well, how is sausage?
Do you want me to explain to you how sausage is made? Because you might actually
now
get
I
want to
know how the sausage is made. Now I want to know because I've
you do
never
that.
Heard that. That is the most ridiculous. That is the most ridiculous saying. I've ever heard in my life how the sausage is made. What?
Can we get back to Avalanche hockey, please?
Sausage is made by grinding meat like pork, beef, or poultry and mixing it.
Oh my God. Okay. Okay. You can do this. You can do this research on your own, Grant. I'll let you do that on your own. But no, it's that.
Come up with a better saying.
I know will not, because that is a fantastic saying and you can.
That's the way the cookie crumbles.
Bailey, don't worry. He's not launch enough to get it.
Oh my God. We're not going back there. Actually.
It made it to the main show.
Yes, it is. Oh
God. No. And that's kind of the extent of the New Jersey Devils game for me, or at least that first one. But you know, you squeak out of that with a point. You squeak out of a very weird matinee back to back with a point, which I'm not mad at. Grant has one more thing to add before we get into the, you know, revenge game that the Avalanche put up.
Yeah, hold on, I gotta make a sausage real quick.
Oh my God.
No, what? I think with the
that but was, how is it made, I don't, I, but how is it made?
I you know, apparently with the grinding of meat. I will say though, I understand everybody's on Brock Nelson, because that was a really big goal that he scored against the New Jersey Devils in the first game. I do want to say though, 2 goals, 1 assist in 11 games. It's not great. No. Not what we wanted out of a guy who's making $7.5 million on the cap. Mm-hmm. So maybe we bring up next week about how Chris McFarland is a terrible GM because he gave a $7.5 million contract to a guy who's not really performing.
I don't know.
But stay tuned next week for when we talk about it.
I don't know
about that.
I think it's worth mentioning that. Honestly, the second Landeskog got moved off of that line, it's looked a lot better.
Yeah.
In terms of its process. And actually Landeskog looks a lot better too on the third line. They're both benefiting. I don't think Landeskog is washed or anything. But I think that he needs, like, exactly like Jonathan Drouin. Like, you get the first 10 game segment, you're like, I want to kill this guy. I want to on the 30th of October, approximately 3 p.m. No, I'm kidding.
I want to make him into a sausage.
I want to make Jonathan Drouin into a sausage. That's going to be the saying now. But I think you give Landeskog the time he needs on a more simple line, like the third line, where he can really just play to his strengths here. And I think he'll start blossoming. And you saw this with, again, I'm going to keep bringing him up, Jonathan Drouin, where he played on that third line, was starting to put up decent production, and you're like, huh, they're actually, like, he's starting to be at least like a functional middle six forward, and then that just built him up to actually playing. I think that that's what Landeskog needs, because a lot of his process is really good. His offense really needs to click together, though, especially his shooting and his hands overall. He's not making very good passing plays, which is something he was always known for, so that's something that needs to come together. But the middle six being shuffled like it is and performing really well is, I think, a testament to the Avs' depth.
I will say with Landeskog specifically, I think his motor is just a little shot right now. And that's nothing bad per se if you're talking about, you know, the kind of player he is and the role that he has on this team. But I will agree in saying, like, as soon as he's moved off of that, you're seeing that second line or Nelson kind of catching up with the pace that Nichushkin's already producing. And it just looks a lot more cohesive. It's working well. Finishing starting to kind of go their way a little bit more. And Landeskog kind of takes on that, you know, captain leadership role on the third line, and that seems to gel just as well as it has for the entire season.
Yeah,
I have had very few complaints about how the third line has worked through 11 games so far.
Yeah, he does his best Jamie Benn impression and says, I'm gonna play on the third line now. It's I think it's a testament to, like, the best games this season that Nelson has played have been after that change. Like, he gets the goal in that same game. And in this game, I thought he was really good. I thought him, Colton, and Nichushkin were flowing. I didn't notice them the second half of the game, to be honest, but I did notice a lot of chances for them in that first half.
So with that said, then, let's go ahead and transition, before this becomes an extremely long episode, to the most recent game against the New Jersey Devils. As I mentioned, this is a revenge game for the Avalanche. They were not satisfied with how that last game transpired. Yes, they got a point out of it, but there were some things to fix, and the process, for the most part, was something they were satisfied with, and they still came out of it with just 1 point. Head into this one, Jacob Markstrom makes his return to the net and, for a lack of better words, fluffs it. The Avalanche get going early, and they go hard in this game. It's a kind of an interesting situation. You get Martin Natchez putting the team on the board first. You get Zakhar Barkov getting his first NHL goal, not just of the season, but of his career, which, you know, props to Barkov. I will say, before moving into the rest of the second period, this was easily Barkov's best game of the season by far. And then the second period hits, and it's still on a roll. Victor Olofsson, who has had chance after chance after chance to start this season so far, and has looked, in my opinion, really, really good through 10, 11 games so far, finally gets rewarded for it. His first goal in burgundy and blue, followed by a Nathan MacKinnon power play goal. Second power play goal of the season, by the way. That first Martin Natchez goal was on the power play as well. Parker Kelly also adds a beautiful finish around Jacob Markstrom. Want to get into some of those fourth line antics in kind of breaking down this game. 5 minutes, starting at the 10-minute mark of the period, or the 10-minute mark of the second period, Stefan Nason finds a stray puck in the middle of the ice, puts it past Wedgewood. Scoring for New Jersey is kind of endless there until Nathan MacKinnon caps off the period with another power play goal. No more New Jersey scoring from there. Victor Olofsson ends off the game with a two-goal third period, making it his first career hat trick, first off, but also his first three goals in an Avalanche sweater. Grant, I see you are going crazy over there. Go ahead and start off this game.
Well, first, I'm just going to touch on the obvious here with the power play, and, you know, MacKinnon having two goals and Olofsson having two goals in the power play. Newsflash: Colorado Avalanche, the one-timer is a very effective way to score. Actually, Natchez also scored on the one-timer. So
hold on really quickly here. Victor Olofsson only had one on the power play, by the way.
Sorry. I forgot, you know, he's just that good. But newsflash, Colorado Avalanche, Dave Hextall, Jared Bednar, Nathan MacKinnon. If you shoot on the one-timer, it's harder for teams to combat that. And I've been telling Bailey about this for years. I like, especially last year when all Nathan MacKinnon did was, like, look for the bumper. Like, my God, unleash the one-timer, unleash the rage. We all know you have it. But the first period went beautifully. I don't think the New Jersey Devils even – I don't think they even had a difficult, like a grade-A chance on goal in the first period. I don't even think they had one in the second period until, you know, their flurry. But I will say, though, this goes back into the whole thing of you have to put teams away. And I don't think it should be – I don't think it's an overstatement to say if you have a 5-goal lead – don't let the other team score four. I don't think that's that far-fetched of a thing to say. But this comes back into an overarching problem where, for some reason, they just let teams, like, it's not like where the team gets one at, like, the 8-minute mark, then they get another at, like, the 4-minute mark, and then we go into the next period, we get one at, like, the 16-minute mark, and then they get one at the 10-minute mark. It's like,
let's absolutely lose the lead we had within a matter of minutes. You know, like, let's let the other team score two goals in 30 seconds kind of thing. And this is the thing that you got to learn early. If you're going to learn it early. Do not let teams back into the game. I don't care that you hung eight on him because Markstrom apparently is Swiss cheese. You know, he's not from Sweden anymore. He's from Switzerland because that cheese had some gaping holes in it. But, you know, put the team away. Don't let them even get close. You know, it's ridiculous. That's how you lost to the Dallas Stars in game seven. Two goals within 3 minutes. Like, it's not even a question. So as well as they played, as well as Victor Olofsson got the hat trick and all that's great, I'm thinking, well, you still haven't learned anything from your first round exit where you got to just put the game away. Don't give the other team an opportunity to get back into the game. But Gavin, I'll let you go ahead on it.
Yeah, I think with that Jersey game, honestly, I think you look at so many of those goals, and the ones you're looking at as what is actually the defense's fault is the fourth one. Most of the time, it's – and again, like, it's tough because that – I think it's that beautiful passing play with the Jersey Devils that they didn't even intend to create. It's just a complete accident and a rebound. That's like, not only is the defense positioned perfectly for that, but so is Wedgwood. There's nothing they can do with that. That is just pure talent. The Jersey Devils, theoretically, should be a top cup contender in the East. And you see why, because they have all of this talent. But the first goal with Stefan Nason, that's just bad. Like, I'm sorry. He doesn't make an attempt to catch that glove save. You're seeing even Markstrom save some stuff like that. But fine, whatever. It's the first goal. He's in tight. It's a weird rebound right to the stick of those guys. It's no one on the defense's fault. It's just that. The goal that I seriously have a problem with is the Dougie Hamilton one where he catches it. Wedgwood completely loses track of the puck because, once again, he's so bad with his lateral movement as of late. He's very chaotic. He just completely is in no position to make any type of save there. And it's an easy tap in for Dougie Hamilton. Now, should there obviously be defensemen helping that? Sure. But for a play that was completely non-dangerous to turn into that, I think if you're not looking at Wedgwood there and saying make a save or like stick to your post, you're looking at a completely different scoring chance there. So
I thought that puck took a really bad rebound bounce off of him though too. So there's that's maybe just some good hockey sense from Dougie Hamilton too.
Well, that's bad rebound control from Wedgwood if we want to be critical here.
It is the problem once again though. It's like the Jersey goals are tough because they come in such quick succession. And I do want to like hop a little bit back on the Bednar blame train, because how do you not call a timeout after the third goal? How do you not just be like, guys, chill out? Like, let's just stop the play. They have all the momentum, not even for your own player's sake, but just to kill their, do the John Cooper special, like kill the other team's momentum with your break. And it's just a bad decision by Jared Bednar to do that. Honestly, I think, yeah, and because Jared, I don't even know about starting Wedgwood in that game, because if Wedgwood does well against Boston, you're like, I don't know. Do you play him and he's got more confidence? Does he perform better? Does he like make the saves he needs to? And is this maybe a three-goal thing? But no, honestly, I don't mind the Avalanche having a rough and tumble game with the Jersey team. I think that was bound to happen, and the Avs were able to score in a way which outscored their problems. And that was chaotic hockey in a 5-minute segment that you don't want to see repeated. And that is my one concern though, is you're seeing these breakdowns happen a lot with the Avs, where it feels like they're the only team that this ever happens to, where it's like, yeah, it's it. Bailey, you're jumping at it.
No. And that's what I was going to say too, is the Avalanche is a team that they make a few mistakes here and there, but normally they're a very reactive team. Like if they see that mistake starting to happen, they can kind of bounce back on it. It's the big mistakes though that start really burning them. And that's where I wonder if there's extra coaching, you know, in certain areas about limiting those bigger mistakes, because if you can limit the amount of big mistakes that are happening, they're pretty reactive through all the other ones too, and can sort of get on a proactive trip to maybe keep those mistakes from happening. Or again, I hate using the word reactive so many times, but they're responding to them well and generally neutralizing them and turning them the other way. They're a quick team. Limit those big mistakes, and a lot of these situations don't happen. While we're talking about goals here too, from, I guess we can talk about our least favorite one from that stretch. I did not like the Jack Hughes goal. I thought if there's any situation that I'm maybe not putting on Scott Wedgwood, that I put more on the team in front of him, it's that one.
Yeah.
Josh Manson makes a really, really bad pinch, allowing them to go the other way. And it's not that, that's probably my least favorite one out of the four.
I think that's fair, honestly. I think, yeah. And luckily we do have our starter back, so we're no longer in this like wait and see, just survive.
It's just a matter of how he's deployed.
Yeah, it's this weekend. Would you say, Bailey, that it's a matter of how the sausage is made?
All right, guys.
Hold on. I've got some important insight.
Mm-hmm. Elite analysis.
Get out of here.
There's a cat.
No, I've got some important insight here, though. We're about to, you know, we're about to play the Vegas Golden Knights with a certain former Toronto Maple Leaf, and I'm just going to say, I don't think Mitch Marner knows how the sausage is made, so I think we're going to show him.
I think it's time to give him a courtesy call.
I think it's time for the courtesy call.
We're doing all of them, all the bits.
The only one actually hold on. Here is moderately
aged. I was thinking
we're
of
not
it.
Gonna get.
I was gonna say, I'm like, how old is Marner? Would you say he's moderately aged?
No, he's getting all of you. He was drafted in 2016, 9 years in the league. Yeah, I'd say he's getting moderately aged. Yeah, I'd say.
All right, guys, we're gonna kind of wind down the episode here. Grant alluded to it. Getting into to another kind of weird matinee situation this upcoming weekend. You've got the Vegas Golden Knights. Yeah, Halloween matchup against the Vegas Golden Knights. I believe that is also Nevada Day. So that's going to be an interesting one. You run into two 2:00 games, like I said, one against the Vegas Golden Knights on Halloween. And then to ring in November, you play the San Jose Sharks. I'm going to go ahead and cover Tuesday while the team is back home against the Tampa Bay Lightning. One really good team here, two teams that are kind of floundering a little bit, but one of which is having really good success with one of their rookies, as we touched on earlier in the episode. Macklin Celebrini is kind of shining for that team right now. Not to get too nitpicky with these matchups, but just kind of some overall thoughts as we wind down the episode here, guys.
Finally, some bottom teams to feast on.
I think the only thing I really have to say is if you take away the top line for the Vegas Golden Knights, they don't have a lot going down the depth chart, because I think Dorofeev, is it Barbashev or is it Dorofeev on the top line? Because I'm going to take that saber bet.
Dorofeev's top line, I think. Dorofeev has like 8 goals. He has some like
Dorofeev's playing insane hockey right now.
Because like, because if it's Barbashev on the top line, then it makes it a little more difficult. But if Dorofeev is on the top line, or if you're Bailey Dorofeev,
that's not what I called him at all.
Dorofeev. That's what you said one time.
I called him Dorofeev.
Yeah, that was right. Dorofeev. That's what it was.
It matters how the cookie crumbles, Grant. All right.
Yeah. Remember how the sausage made. But honestly, all you have to do is limit the Eichel line and just cannot give them a power play. This isn't like New Jersey was top 10, top five in the league on the power play, which is, you know,
second, I believe.
They were third on Sunday, but on Tuesday, I don't know what they were. But with the Vegas Golden Knights, you cannot let them get on the power play. Do not let Dorofeev score on you, and don't let the first line score on you, and you'll win the game pretty easily. They have the Vegas Golden Knights. They have depth, but it's not a Dallas Stars. It's not a Carolina Hurricanes. It's not a Florida Panthers. You know, I think the Avalanche's bottom nine can outplay the bottom nine for the Vegas Golden Knights, and that's where you're gonna have to win the game. So, looking at you, Landeskog, this is your opportunity to get your first goal in the this season.
And he should already have one. Let's be honest here.
And this is also Jack Drury's time to show that he is the guy there for 3C, far and away. And San Jose is just going to be a cake. They should take care of business. Need to take care of business. No other way about it. Then the Lightning, just like, I don't even know. I have to look a little bit more into the Lightning. I don't know why they're playing so badly.
I don't know. They're wishy-washy right now. Yeah, for me, the Knights are definitely they're a tough opponent. That's my hot take of the day.
I don't think that's hot at all.
Freezing cold.
Man, honestly, Arctic
levels of
honestly, I might get hypothermia from that take.
Fair enough, bro. But no, I mean, their center depth. Their center depth is probably one of the best in the league. I mean, you have Eichel, Hurdle, and William Karlsson. But outside of that, they are a team that is a little weak at wing. And that is something that I agree with Grant, is you're going head-to-head. You're trying to roll their lines against ours. And the best part about the West is it is finally declining in its Thunderdome-like atmosphere. And Western teams aren't the best of the best in the entire league anymore, so thank God. And with the Knights, you just really a thing about the Knights that's also very surprising is when I was looking at charts of finishing and I was looking at the Avs all the way at the bottom of like team finishing, the Knights are way overperforming. They have a unreal team finishing, and their actual like 5v5, what they're actually creating versus what they're putting in the net, is incredibly unsustainable. So they are getting extremely lucky. Jack Eichel is on fire, which my fantasy team loves. But it's another situation where you're running into a team that is riding on some luck, and it should be interesting to see what happens and how you take control of them, because you're a team that hasn't been had a lot of luck at all, but still managed to create. So it's kind of those two things coming together. As for the San Jose Sharks, I mean, it's a bit of a trap game for sure, because you are coming off the tougher opponent. You're saying, like, all right, guys, we can take care of business. Just go in there. But they have a very young, the baby Sharks, as they like to call them. They have enough of a dangerous offensive team right now, a lot of young players, where they can be dangerous, that if you aren't paying attention, they will drop three on you in a single period. So that to me is also a big test for the Avalanche, is how do you, like, because we've seen a lot of the times the Avalanche will come into these back-to-back games against weaker opponents and they will play down to their competition. So I want to see how they come into a game like that, however the results go against the Vegas Golden Knights. I am more interested to see how they do if they win, because they're feeling good. They're like, whatever about this game. But if they come out being, you know, not a great game against the Vegas Golden Knights, I do expect them to blow out the Sharks. But it's going to be an interesting character analysis to look at the San Jose Sharks. I won't even touch on the Lightning because I have no idea how they're going to play.
Yep.
It's almost a flash in the pan, might you say. Maybe lightning in a bottle.
God.
I don't know. I don't know if the sharks know how the sausage is made.
I'm going to mute you for the rest, like the last 5 minutes.
I'm
going
to say that to everybody. They don't know how the sausage is made. I can tell by looking at them. They don't know.
You know what? The sharks, they're just not notch, bro. They're just not notch.
I'm going to mute you, Grant.
They're very young.
You can very well drive. I'll just mute you right back.
Yeah.
I'll kick you out.
They're pretty youngly aged, in my opinion.
Yeah, modern.
Grant, go ahead and start us on the outro. Where can people
find
you? We've descended
into utter debauchery.
Yeah, you can find me. I haven't figured out how the sausage is made yet. But if you want to know this, you know, if you want to know today when this podcast goes up, you can find me on Twitter at Grant_Fosser_15. I'm just a hockey fan who gets angry at refs and other teams' fan bases when they're being, you know, little a-holes. But you know what? Coming tomorrow, I will be posting about how the sausage is made.
Great.
I'll take.
Gavin, where can the people find you?
You can find me over at Avalanche Digest. We post a lot of quick, short-form content. We have a game analysis up about the New Jersey Devils game already, so go ahead and check that out. And yeah, we were always just trying to get you the best news. And if you love all things Avalanche, that's the place you want to be.
Before I get into my personal endeavors, be sure to go give some love to the Hockey Podcast Network. They're the reason we get to do this. And they've got a lot of great content outside of Avalanche content that we are providing you guys. If you're looking for a show on any of the other 31 teams in the NHL, they have a podcast for you. Be sure to go check them out over at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. If you're looking for some more general league content, fantasy, things of that sort, they also have shows on their network for that as well. I know Terry Ryan with Shorzy has a show that he updates pretty regularly, so be sure to go check that out. Thanks again to DraftKings for sponsoring. As far as I go, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. I am the credentialed beat reporter for the Colorado Avalanche with DNBR. If you're looking for some daily content, be sure to go check out the DNBR.com or check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. With that said, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of the Avalanche Warning. We'll have another episode out for you next week, but thank you guys so much for listening. And again, we'll see you guys here next week at the Avalanche Warning. See ya.